Pocket of World. Hey, Brucey, why'd you sign off after such a beautiful good morning?
I thought it was Thursday because that's when we start the new Mesanctor, and that's what you're doing today.
I see. So you
have to finish my course.
So you got lost in time? Is that it?
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Boker Tov World, what a happy special day as we are about to begin a wonderful new Mesechet. And it's even nicer because we haven't yet said goodbye to our dear Sanhedrin, which is a very fortunate thing because, as it's going to turn out this morning, the Mishnah that we're about to learn is a direct continuation from Sanhedrin. And that's its only justification for the way that it phrases things, as we'll see in a moment. But before we begin, let us recognize that something strange is going on here because we're beginning a Mesechet that has a name, Makot, and which doesn't really seem to be about Makot until we get to be the perek that discusses Elohim Halokim, which is the third perek towards the end. And up until then, we're going to be talking about the dinim of Edim Zoymimim, and then we'll be talking about the dinim of Galut, which are the Arei Miklat, and Ritzicha. I mean, it's weird. Why would we call the entire Mesechet Makot? And what we have to recognize is the strangest coincidence, which is that the Makor for all of the dinim of Makot and how to give Makot and so on is actually Edim Zomimim, which is very strange. And we're going to see why that is true, even though Edim Zomimim does not seem to be related to Makot at all. Because after all, what is the din of Edim Zomimim? Let's just review this because we've been talking about it a lot in Sanhedrin as well. What's the din of Edim Zomimim? So there's a special case. Normally, we have a concept called hakrasha. Hakrasha is where one cut of Edim, remember, cut is a minimum of two, and that's the minimum of Alpishne Edim, Yakum Davar. Of course, it could be Alpishne Edim or Shlosha Edim. So no matter how big the cut is, it has a din of one group of witnesses. Specifically, actually, in terms of the din of Edim Zomimim, as we'll see, in that all of the Kat is considered to be one witness, so to speak, which has to be all of them muzam. But before we get to what that means, let me finish the thought. And that is, the idea of hakhasha is that if there's a contradiction between what one group of Edim say and another group of Edim say, then we don't accept either of them, obviously. We have no way of determining which one of them is correct. And therefore, that Edus is, for all intents and purposes, Bitela. It has various dinim. We saw the issue of Hakrasha, Trilat Hazama, which we've brought up earlier. But that is the idea of Hakrasha. There's another totally different concept, which is called Hazama. Now, the truth is that Hazama is a very big chidush, in a sense. Because what it means is that if another cut of Edim do not claim to know anything at all about the actual event. In other words, they don't know anything about the testimony. They only know about the testifiers. And they come to tell us that, look, we have no idea whether what these guys are saying is true or not true. But one thing we do know is that they certainly were not there to see it. Because if they claim that on Thursday, as Brucey said, I mean, he claims it's Thursday, on Thursday, these two people claim that they were in such and such a place and witnessed such and such a murder, robbery, whatever it is. These other witnesses come along and they say, we have no idea about that murder or robbery or any event because we certainly weren't there. But one thing we do know is that these guys weren't there because they happened to be with us in a completely different location at the time that they claim to have seen this event. So that is a different idea than Hakasha because they're not discussing the testimony and they are going after the witnesses. And what they are saying is, we know that these witnesses are liars. We don't know that they're lying about this, but maybe that happened. But we know that they are liars. There, the Torah gives us a very special halacha, which is, Kasher zamam la'asot la'achiv, the same idea that they wanted to carry out against their brother. We've discussed this pasuk, of course, before, because it's Zomer Beipat Kohen, which I'll remind you of in a moment. So that is the asitem. The Bezdin is to do lo, for some reason, in Lashon Yachid, kasher zamam la'asot la'achiv. He is punished with whatever he was attempting to cause to the defendant that he pretended to know about. So if he said that that guy robbed and owed $1,000 for the robbery, then these two witnesses will have to pay that $1,000. If they said that person murdered someone, then we would kill them because they are saying that he is supposed to be killed, and so on and so forth. Now, that has nothing to do with Makot, except, of course, if they had come to say that so-and-so had done something which would have brought him an onesh of Makot in a Bezdin, so then we would give them Makot. But that's not because of Makot, is it? That's just because of Kasher Zamam. Now, the point is here that in the event that we cannot carry out the idea of the Kasher Zamam, there seems to be a default penalty of Makot. Where does that come from? Well, we're not sure. Possibly from the din of what it says in the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, which is the iser of actually saying false testimony. And that itself is a law in the Torah. So why wouldn't there be a chiyuv of Makot because of that? Well, that may be because there's no act in that. So it's possible that there needs to be a new basis for giving Makot in cases where there's no Kasher Zamam. But all of that is irrelevant to the question that I want to bring up now, and that is, why is the Masechet Makot a Masechet that is essentially about Einim Zomimim and cases where the Einim Zomimim are not punished with Kasher Zamam? So here it turns out that we have a very strange connection between the idea of Einim Zomimim because of the fact that the introduction to the idea of Einim Zomimim goes along with V'hipilo HaShofet. Why? Because it says V'haya Im Bin HaKot HaRasha, and that Im Bin HaKot HaRasha is the Makor of Malkus, is introduced with the words V'itzdiku Et HaTzadik V'irshiu Et HaRasha, which doesn't make any sense. Of course, V'itzdiku Et HaTzadik V'irshiu Et HaRasha. What does that have to do with V'hipilo HaShofet? So the Gemara is going to see in that pasuk a reference to Einim Zomimim. V'itzdiku Et HaTzadik, who was always the tzaddik, and we now discover to actually be the proper tzaddik because we found out that the Edim were liars, v'irshiu Et HaRasha, and then v'ipilu HaShofet. What? Aha. So there seems to be some hidden, profound connection between the very idea of testimony and false testimony and hazama, which is called hazama because of that pasuk, kasher zamam. And why focus on the zamam? Zamam means the nasty planner. Why focus on the zamam? Ah, that's because if they actually managed to get the guy killed or to get the guy beaten with Makos, there is no din of kasher zamam. Why? Because that has gone beyond the planning stage. In that case, they already carried it out. And it's only the zimama, it's only the planning stage that is mechayev kasher zamam, a wild halacha. And it obviously opens up whole new issues that we're going to need to explore as we go through the Masechet. But in any event, this gives us a nice opening so that we understand where it is that we're going when we open up our Mishnah with the strange words of Ketzad ha'edim na'asim zomimim. So how do witnesses become zomimim? Now, what do you expect it's going to say? It's going to say, two witnesses come, and they say, Imanu hayitem, boto ayom, b'makom ploni, you were with us, you couldn't possibly have seen. Well, there is a Mishnah like that, except we're not going to get to it, except in another 5 days. So, unfortunately, the Masechet does not begin with the answer to the question that it raised. How do Aden become Zomimim? Instead, it goes on to talk about cases where the Eidim don't become Zomimim. And actually, I mean, they may be Eidim Zomimim, but we cannot carry out Kasher Zomam. Now, how could that be that we can't carry out Kasher Zomam? Well, let's think about a case where what it was that they were testifying to was a state of being. Now, there's no way that we can impose a state of being on them if it makes no sense. So, for instance, suppose they claim, says the Mishnah, so we have a Kohen who has been assumed to be a Kohen his whole life. They walk in and they say, we happen to know that his father had married a woman that was Psula Lakuhuna, so she was a divorcee, or she was a chalutza. Now, we'll have to get into that issue of chalutza a little bit later, because it complicates matters. But remember that chalutza is a woman whose husband had died, and the brother was supposed to do yibum, and instead he refused to do yibum, and opted for chalitza instead, in which she takes off his shoes, spits in front of him, and so on and so forth, right? That woman, midrabbanan, is not allowed to marry a Kohen because of the similarity to the divorcee, to the Grusha. In any event, in this case, what can we do? Can we make him a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza? I mean, what if he's not even a Kohen? What would be the point of making him a Ben Grusha or a Ben Chalutza? So, if he is a Kohen, can we impose a state of Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza on him with all of its implications? Which would include making his children psulim for kuna forever. Can we impose that state upon him if the state doesn't exist, really? That's what the Gemara is going to be talking about to explain the Mishnah. But in any event, you can readily see that there may be things that we simply cannot do the mitzvah of kasher zamam to punish them the way that they wanted to treat the other person. So what happens in that case? Now, obviously, that is a case where the Eidim do not get the normal din of Nasim Zomamim, and so it seems the least reasonable answer to the question of Ketzada Eidim Nasim Zomamim. It actually seems off the wall, if you think about it. And that, of course, is what the Gemara is going to be discussing immediately. And it's going to turn out that this is our connection to Masechet Sanhedrin. So it's good that we're still connected, as we'll soon see. So let us begin, after all of that fanfare, let us begin the Mishnah and just read it kipshuto. So, ketzad eidim nasim zomim, how do we get witnesses to be zomimim? Me'inim anu b'ish ploni shu ben grush shu ben chalutza. Two people or more come along and say, this certain person, which was assumed until now to be a kosher kohen, turns out that he's actually the son of a woman who was a divorcee or a chalutza. So what would be the din? Do we do kasher zaman? No. In omrim, yaseh zeh ben grusha ben chalutza tachtav. We don't say, okay, then these witnesses, now it's funny that it says yaseh zeh, which is a lashon yachid, and there's no such concept ever of a single aid zomim, because either both of them are zomimim or neither of them are zomimim, and yet the Mishnah chooses to speak about it in Lashon Yachid. But actually, if you think about it, that's the way the Pasuk spoke about it as well. Weird, because it says, Vasitem lo kasher zamam lasod le'achiv, and that can never happen because it'll never be a lo. So, okay, all of those things we're going to be exploring and thinking about. But we don't say that these guys should be Ben Gerusha Ben Chalutza as they wanted him to be. Instead, what? Ela loke arba'im. So strangely enough, we give them Malkus, even though it doesn't say anywhere, at least on the surface, it doesn't say to give them Malkus. Okay, there's a question over here as to whether the Chalutza is actually meant, or it just got thrown in here because Grusha v'chalutza always go together in terms of 99% of the dinim, and maybe they just was assumed that when we always say Grusha v'chalutza, or does it really mean Grusha v'chalutza? Why would it not mean? Well, that's because chalutza is only a gzera d'rabbanan. Would we give Eidim Zomimim, who claim that somebody is a ben chalutza, which has no meaning whatsoever as far as the din of the Torah is concerned, would we give them the same makot that we give to a real Eid Zomem who said something about an issue that the Torah recognizes as an actual issue? Now that's a big question. The Rambam actually says that we would. Now this is an overall question that affects many, many issues as to whether a derabbanan concept is taken into consideration as extent when it comes to the description of the way the Torah is talking about, let's say in this case, testimony. Well, you could argue that the testimony that someone is a ben chalutza has absolutely no meaning in terms of the Torah because there's no concept of a ben chalutza in the Torah. And therefore, the Mishnah couldn't possibly have meant that there's a chiyuv malchus. Or you can argue, which is clearly what the Rambam is saying, that the question of the object of the testimony is irrelevant. The point is the impact of the testimony. In fact, if they go into court and they say this guy is Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, he is going to be treated as a Kohen who is parcel. Now, what's the difference why he's a Kohen who's parcel? Bottom line is that the witnesses were intending to take away the benefits and status of his kahuna. So that means that they were giving effective testimony, meaningful testimony. Whether the Torah itself would have recognized the impact of that testimony is irrelevant. All we care about is the fact that they were going to cause this impact by saying those words. And therefore, they're considered exactly the same as if they had said, these are Ben Grusha. Now, that's how the Rambam understands it. And this is an issue that affects many, many questions, whether the Rabbanan status, actually, once that Gezera is made, does it change the status vis-a-vis the din in the Torah? Because, in effect, it has the same impact. But we'll talk about that as well as we go along. Now, there's another case. The other case is, Me'inim anu be'ish ploni, shuhu chayav liglot. Now, remember, what is galut all about? We have the 48 ore miklat, which consists of the 42 cities that we were just talking about in the Gemara, 42 cities that were given to the Levim, and yesterday we were talking about which of those cities, 9 cities that were given by Yehuda and by Shimon. And that was our whole discussion about whether that means 4.5 cities from each. But the point is there are 42 cities in total given to the Levim. There's an additional 6 special cities that were set aside for the sole purpose of being Ere Miklat. And Ere Miklat is a city in which someone who killed accidentally is sent until the death of the Kohen Gadol. And he lives there. And he has to leave his normal life, take up a new life in a new place, and that way he is protected from any type of vengeance killings or the type of crazy things that can go on when you've got these relatives who are out to get you, family feuds, city feuds. He is protected. So suppose they say that so-and-so was Chayev Galut. Now, Galut is also a kapara, and it's an onesh, besides being a protection. So you would say, okay, in that case, since they wanted to send someone away to an Ir Miklat, and by the way, this becomes the whole next perek. The next perek is Elohein HaGolin. So essentially, this Mishnah is really setting up the Mesechet in a way. And now they say this guy is supposed to be sent to an Ir Miklat because he killed Bishogeg. Ein omrim iglesia tachtav. Well, we don't say. Let these two witnesses who claim that he meant was meant to go to Galut, they have to now go to Galut, and we'll see why we don't say that. Ela loke arbaim. Instead, he gets Malkus arbaim. Now, the Gemara starts by asking the obvious question that this Mishnah is off the wall. How can you ask how do Aiden become Zomanim and then tell me the very special cases where they don't become Zomanim in a normal way and they do not have a din of Vasitem lo kasher zamam la'asot le'achiv? So what should the Mishnah have said? The Mishnah should have said, quote, Ketzad ein Aiden nasim Zomanim. It should have said, what are the special cases where witnesses do not become Aiden Zomanim? Now, the fact, let's say that the Mishnah would have said that, we still would have thought it's sort of off the wall to introduce the one case where Edim are not treated with the din of Edim Zomimim and start the Masechet with that case. Anyway, that would have been extremely weird, especially if we're talking about a Masechet that seems to be focused on Edim Zomimim. At least the whole first parak is. Well, that obviously has to do with what we spoke about before. We're introducing a Masechet which is interested in the fact that there are cases where Edim Zomimim get makot, because those makot end up being the archetype of makot in the Torah, and all the dinim of makot are strangely learned from that parsha of Edim Zomimim. And therefore, Masechet Makot begins exactly where it needs to begin. How is it that Edim Zomimim would not be Edim Zomimim in terms of Kasher Zomam, but would rather be Chayev Makot, which ends up teaching us a whole concept of Makot, as we'll see, to the point where we get to the perek of what are all of the cases where we do give Makot, and we go through them, or we go through the basic rules anyway of them. But anyway, so the Gemara doesn't realize this at this point. The Gemara is simply asking, I mean, it doesn't seem very logical. Why don't we have a Mishnah that says, what are the special cases where Edim are not Nasim Zomimim normally? And not to mention the fact that the question that you raise about Ketzad Edim Nasim Zomimim is actually addressed in the Mishnah later on Daf Hey. And over there, it says Beferish. What happens in a case where, Aval Amrulahem, if two witnesses come and they say to those witnesses, the first witnesses, we don't know anything about the testimony, but Hechatem Me'idim, how do you have the right to say anything about these events when you weren't even there? Sha'arei Bo'oto Hayom Atem Hayitim Imanu B'Makom Ploni. You were somewhere else at that time and could not possibly have seen it. Harei Elu Zomimim. Okay, so then the Mishnah clearly distinguishes there between the concept of Hakhasha and the concept of Hazama, and the Mishnah is going to properly address this. What the heck is this Mishnah doing here, where, first of all, it's claiming to do what a Mishnah really does do later, which should have been the way we begin. And secondly, it actually lies about what it's doing. It's not about Ketzarim Nasim Zomimim. It never answers that question. So how do you explain this wild Mishnah? Well, says the Gemara, actually, you have to realize we're still smack bang in Masechet Sanhedrin. Now, what was the last thing that we learned about in Sanhedrin? I'll bet you think the last thing that we thought about was who has a chelik in Olam Haba and who doesn't, right? But the funny thing is that that's not the last parak of Sanhedrin, at least not the way, if you look in the Yerushalmi, it's only the penultimate parak. And then we go back to the prior parak, and we close with the dinim of the Nisrafim and the Nechmalkim and so on and so forth, which brings us to the closing of that parak, which is in the event that you have a bat kohen that committed adultery. What's the din there? The man partner of that adultery is chayev, a normal misa for adultery, which is chenek. But the bat kohen is chayevet, a special din of sreifa. Now, you remember we dealt with that at length, and the Mishnah there says, zomime bat kohen. Oh, ho, ho. So now, the witnesses that claim to have seen this adulterous event, they are treated in which way? Are they treated the way that the Bat Kohen is treated? For planning to kill her in Beis Din through a Misa of Sreifa, do we give them Sreifa? Or are they treated the way the male was treated? They plan to treat in Beis Din, which is by being Mechayev and Chenek. Zomame Bat Kohen uboala. Both are treated to the Misa of the male partner. Why? Because it says, Vasitem lo kasher zomam lasot le'achiv. And it's the brother. Why mention the brother? Because in a case where there's both brother and sister, so to speak, your brother Jew and your sister Jewess, we choose the Misa that would have been given to the male, not to the female. That's the closing of that parak. Continues this parak. Ah, but there may be cases where the Edom get neither. And that's taking it a step further. And that is why we talk about the case of a Kohen, where we say that that Kohen, at a special dinim of Kohuna, this was the Bat Kohen, this is about the Kohen. There's even a case where they're not treated to either the sister or the brother. And that would be a case where they say, that there they get nothing in common with what either of them would have gotten, like was in back in Sanhedrin, and instead they're given Malkus for a reason that triggers Masechet Malkus. Woo! Now this also answers another question, because the Mishnah has a much easier option, and that is, it could have said, Me'inim anu be'ish ploni shehu mamzer. How about that? We testify that this guy is the result of an illicit birth between two arayos where the child is a mamzer. Now that puts him into a terrible position. He's not allowed to marry into Kal Yisrael and so on and so forth. Why don't we just say that? What do we do if they, do we say we make them mamzerim? How can we make them mamzerim? They aren't mamzerim, and we'll see the same reason that we can't make them a ben grush or ben chalutza. We can't make them a mamzer, and then we wouldn't have to limit the case to the case of a kohen. It would be just a broad idea that a state is not given as the result of kasher zamam. But now that we're saying, Tosus points this out, now that we're saying that it's a continuation of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which refers to Zomimi Bat Kohen, it makes sense to continue the discussion now. Keitzad Ha'edim Nasim Zomimim, even though they will not be getting either Kasher Zomam Lasot La'achiv or Kasher Zomam Lasot La'achoto, neither of the above. Can they still be Edim Zomimim? Yes, they can still be Edim Zomimim. And what is done to them instead? What's done to them instead is the Makot. V'pilo HaShofet, as we'll see. Now, this has massive implications in terms of testimony in general, because remember that any Edut that is incapable of becoming Edim Zomimim is not kosher Edut. It's called Edut She'i Ata Yochol HaZima. A Gabi concept who is hiding, apparently doesn't want to pick up his pen today, but just to make certain that he's got that, Edut she'iata yochol hazima, is Ori now taking the notes? All right, so then it's Edut she'iata yochol hazima. Any testimony that you cannot actually bring to a state of azoma, and therefore there are no consequences to giving false testimony, is not considered to be testimony at all. So how would we ever be able to accept testimony about things where kasher zamam cannot be carried out? Ah, now that is a big issue. So if there are consequences, in this case, the consequences of the malchus, there's many, many issues that we'll see throughout the Masechet. This is one of the major questions that is raised already by Tosfos here. Is the malchus the equivalent of the kasher zamam, or, and therefore these are edush atayachol azimam, and they're b'mokom, the punishment of kasher zamam, or is the very fact that the Torah has given us remozim, that these things cannot be kasher zamamed, that itself tells us that the Torah is also excluding them from the requirement of kasher zamam, and therefore you don't need to be edut shatayachol azima. Now you'll understand that that, of course, there's major differences in how we understand that, because if they're actually not required to be edim shatayachol azimam, then that would mean that even if we don't have accurate information as to the exact time that the edus took place or so on, it wouldn't matter to us because we don't need the idea of edut shatayachol azimam. Just for example, there's dozens of differences between these two approaches, and we'll gradually uncover them, hopefully, Bezrat Hashem, in the course of our investigations in the Mishnah. Okay, so now things are starting to take shape. So this Mishnah is actually the very next step to what we talked about in Sanhedrin, and therefore it continues like this. So it says over there, Kol Azomimi Magdimim Lota Mita. So back there, where we were holding at the end, in the closing of the Sanhedrin as it was originally ordered, we put the, nowadays, the Chelek Olam Haba as a separate issue because it doesn't follow through with the Dinim of Bezdin Shalmata. So actually, at the end of that perek, which was on Daf Pei Tet, the Mishnah said, any normal Zomimim are given the same Misa that they wanted to give, except for Zomime Bat Kohen and the male who committed the adultery, She'ein Magdimim Lo Tamita Ela Lamita Acheret. They don't get the same as her, which is Sreifa, they get Chenek. Now, this Mishnah continues on, V'yeshedim Zomimim Acherim She'ein Osim Behem Din Azama Kolikar. There's other Edim Zomimim that instead of Azama, Ela Malkut Arba'im are given Malkut Arba'im. Now the Mishnah opens up Ketzad. How do we actually proceed in Edim Zomimim where we cannot be Mekayim Kasher Zomam? How did those Edim become Zomimim? Which, Rabbosai, I just want to suggest to you, the phraseology clearly indicates that the point of the Mishnah is that in giving them makas, we are giving them the din of Edim Zomimim, as far as the question that I raised earlier, and that therefore they are Edut Sha'ata Yachola Hazimam, you see, because they do become Edim Zomimim by virtue of the makas that they're going to be getting. So certainly the language seems to strongly indicate that the correct way to understand this is that the Malkus takes the place of the din of Kasher Zomam and leaves them as real Edim Zomimim, and therefore they are Edushata Yechol Azim. I hope you're following me. I'm just trying to get you involved and excited and intellectually attached to the elements that are here so that it doesn't sound like a bunch of silly words like, you know, when you're 8 years old and learning the Masechet and I don't know. This was
trying to hit it off right with the new Masechet.
Very good. This was actually the first Masechet that I ever learned as a child. And I still remember like, what? Okay. It's like, okay, if you say so. Not the right way to learn a Masechet. So therefore it says, how is there such a case, Ketzad? Now, how do we know that, though? I mean, why do you say that we can't do Kasher Zomam, first of all? I'd like to understand that. That's because the Omar crop, Vasitem lo Kasher Zomam, it stresses lo. You can only do to him what he was going to do. Now, remember, we raised the question before, why does it say lo? Why doesn't it say lahem? But the lo is the focus on the individual. That's the point. So you can only do to the individual, but not to his children. They are not the individual. That is strongly accentuated by focusing on not the group. That's not the group, but not the children of the group. Him, but not his children. Now, that speaks very strongly, right? So, lo velo lazaro, if the state that you seek to impose on him would have actually damaged his children, then that's not the correct application. Okay, fine, says the Gemara, so don't make his children ben grusha ben chalutza. Say that only he loses his rights as a Kohen because we treat him as a ben grusha ben chalutza, and then you could still be Mekayimet. So, Livsulul Adidei, Velo Livsulul Azarei. Can we do that? What good would that do, silly? If we did that, it wouldn't be Kasher Zomam. Because what he wanted to do was to passel that person in a way that would passel his children. So, what are we going to say? Well, he planned to passel that person, and therefore let's passel him, but not his children. But that's not what he was going to do. So we are up against the catch 22. If you're mekayim kasher zomam, you're not allowed to because it's only lo. If you only do lo, then it's not kasher zomam. So put the two together, and what do you get? Malchus? How do we get malchus? Okay, that we have to see. But anyway, be'inan kasher zamam la'asot. But we need to give him what he was going to do, but we can't do that. Barpada attempts to bring a simple basis for this halacha. And he says, we don't even need the vasitem lo velo lezaro. It simply follows logically, says Barpada. Look, a person who is a Kohen, and he is mechalal his children. How is he mechalal his children? He marries a woman that he's not suited for, right? And now he's got children with that woman. These children are going to be chalalim. They're going to be the ben grusha or the ben chalutza. Does that impact him in any way? No. The Kohen himself, despite the fact that he has turned his children into psulim, Chalolim, b'nei grusha, b'nei chalutza, doesn't affect him in any way. And that's if he actually does it. Now, these Edim, they didn't do it. They tried to do it. So, habal chalel v'lo chilel, somebody who's trying to make a person a chalal, but he doesn't succeed because we found out that he wasn't even there, and therefore he was lying. Eino din shaloyet chalel. So, obviously, we can't make him a chalal, because he is even less than the Kohen who himself was Michalel. Why do we need a Pasuk? Maski Floravina. Well, yes, that's brilliant, Barpada, except for the fact that then we might as well get a knife and cross out the piece in the Torah that talks about Enim Zomim. Because what you've just done is you took the floor out from underneath the din of Enim Zomim, for heaven's sakes. Im kein bital to Torah's Enim Zomim. So what you've done now is you've made Edim Zomimim ridiculous, because I can make the same kavachomer. Somebody who's an Eid Zomim, and the Bezdin did not find out that he was an Eid Zomim until it was too late, and we already took out the poor victim by giving him skila, and now the Edim come along and say, these guys were liars, how did you kill that man? Anyway, what do we do? Nothing. Because he's Hasokel, is not a Zomim, he already carried it out. So Mahasokel ain't on this cow. If they only wanted to carry out Skila in the court, but they were found out in time. So for sure, we're not going to kill them, because we wouldn't have killed them if the guy was actually killed. Aha. Yeah, makes a heck of a lot of sense, except for one problem. But that's precisely what the halacha actually is when it comes to Edim Zomimim. So, you might as well throw out the whole din of Edim Zomimim from the Torah completely. In Edim Shaloy Yisakel. So this Barpada argument is obviously an irrelevant argument when it comes to the sugya of Edim Zomimim. So cross that out. Whew, okay. Elamach Varta Kedushanina Mikora, the first approach was better, namely Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who said that the Torah specifically excludes this din of Grusha v'Chalutza from the dinim of Edim Zomimi. Now, let me take a look at that second point. Me'idim anubish ploni shuchayev galut. So the Mishnah says somebody who was almost going to be sent away to an ir miklat because of his testimony, and we find out that they are Zomimim, the din is, you would think that we would send away the witnesses to the Irmiklat, but we do not. Instead, we give them Malkus. Well, how do we know that? We know in Emile. Omer Eish Lakish. Well, it says in the Pasuk about a Mrotzeach B'Shogeg, Hu Yanus El Achat Ha'arim. He shall run to one of these cities that we set aside. Now, obviously, who? It should just say Yanus. It was talking about the Rotzeach. When it says who, it means he, not the Zomimim. Rabbi Yochanan says, well, I would think it's a Kal v'chomer. Umahu sha'asah ma'aseh b'mezid eino gola. Look, think about it like this. A murderer, in the event, if he would have killed and killed with full intent, but let's say he didn't get hatra'ah. So we can't carry out a chiyuv misa in Beis Din. Do we send him to an ir miklat? No. Eino gole. Because the concept of the ir miklat is limited to people who killed b'shogeg. And it has a specific impact on those people, for those people, and is a kapora on those people as well. So then, ein shelo asu ma'aseh b'mezid. So if they didn't even actually kill, but they just spoke about it, they tried, ein odin shelo yiglu. So how could they be included in the special halacha of an ir miklat? Says the Gemara, excuse me. But isn't that the whole point? He hanotenet. Actually, what you're saying is the very reason why I would think that they would be sent to an ir miklat. Why? Because the truth is that the ir miklat is limited to cases of shogeg that are not even close to blameworthy shogeg. So in other words, if there's something about what he did that is really criminal neglect, he doesn't go to the ir miklat either. And nothing happens to him. Well, why is that? Why does it have to be someone who is completely and totally shogeg and only then go to the ir miklat? That's because the ir miklat is seen as a miklat, not only physically, but it's also a kapora on the individual for what he did. If he goes beyond a certain level, so there's a ceiling to who is ra'ui to get that kapora. If it's somebody who is criminally neglectful, so then he does not get to go to the ir miklat. So in a sense, you have to be worthy to go to an ir miklat. So maybe that's the point. Someone who actually killed, but he didn't get hatra'ah, let's say. He's not worthy to go to the ir miklat. But in this case, that's an order. Who shasa maaseh b'mezid should not go to the ir miklat, ki eich delo tavi le kapara. He's not worthy of the kapara of the ir miklat. But maybe these edim zomamim, who ended up not doing any kind of maaseh b'mezid, so it was certainly not a direct murder, they only were giving testimony. So maybe they are not as bad, and they're still within that level of individual who deserves the kapara, nami likle kiecha, that they should have ilu kapara. So therefore, the argument of Rabbi Yochanan could just as likely be a reason why we should say that we ought to send them into galut. You know, Naftali had once decided that he was going to come back, encourage, and show us his glowing face. And somehow or other, for the past couple of days, we're being deprived. More and more deprivation. And even some of those days, you'll notice, are late arrival days. Now, that is an example of Hayom omer lo aseh kach, ulamachar omer lo aseh kach, ubisof omer lo forget about dafyomi completely. That was the prime example of the Chachamim about what happens when a person starts with his Yetzer Hara and refuses to show his face on the Daf Yomi. A practical and very much Musar Haskel Limud. Hi, Naftali. Great to see you. I hope you come back for more abuse. Okay. All right, then. Ela machvarta kederesh lakish. So clearly, our first approach, that it's gzerata katuv, and it's hu velo zomamav, that makes more sense than attempting to back it by some kind of logical limud. Omar ula. Okay, now look. The elephant in the room at this point is, how the heck did we go from proving that you don't get kasher zomam to substituting malchus for kasher zomam? I mean, like, we've talked about minah animili, but the main minah animili, which of course is the whole point that we've been searching for why this besechet is makot, is missing. So we're going to, in a sort of sneaky way, get around to talking about that now. And that is Ula, who raised a fascinating question that struck everyone as being itself off the wall. Omar Ula, remez liyedim zaymimim in hatera minayim. Where is there a hint somewhere in the holy book to this whole concept of Edim Zomimim? Huh? Remez Edim Zomimim in the Torah? Are you nuts? Remez Edim Zomimim? It says, Vasitem lo kasher zaman. I understand. It's a fresh pasuk, what Edim Zomimim. Why are you looking for a remez? It's not a hint. This is an open description of the din of kasher zaman lasot l'achiv. Ah, but what I really meant was, a remez le'edim zomimim shalokin minat Torah minayin. Where do we get the idea that there is malchus involved in an edim zomim who cannot actually be given kasher zaman? Naftali, if you really need to break, of course, don't chas v'shalom. I just love to see you, but if you gotta go, of course. Yes, of course, I know that. I know that. just a little bit, you know, let's mix it a bit. Okay. So the real question is, and now it turns out that this question, the remez leidim zomimim, is actually that which opens up the entire Masechet to be called Masechet Makot and is the real and profound underlying mystery of the connection of Edim Zomimim to the very idea of Malchus. It's not just, again, the Gemara pretends, as always, that it's just a simple question of where does the Mishnah get the fact that instead of giving him Kasher Zomam, we give him Malchus. But it turns out that there's something very strange that is now exposed. So what I was really asking, Sazula, is remez le'edim zomimim shelokim min ha-Torah in the event that you cannot give the kasher zomam like the cases in the Mishnah. I will tell you, says Ula. Tichtiv, take a look at this weird parsha, okay? So what does it say over here? Vitzdiku et atzadik. Now, it starts off talking about a fight between two people, which normally means, okay, you guys got into an argument about rent. Did you pay the rent? Did you not pay the rent? So what does it say? Yeriv bein anashim. So there's an argument over here between two people. V'nikshu el ha-mishpat. Okay, so they come to court. And the court is shvatum. They judge who is the one that is actually responsible and who is guilty and who is not guilty. So, vizdiku et atzadik, virshiu et harasha. So they say, listen, you're the one who basically has been stealing money. You're going to have to pay. And the other guy, they're going to say, no, you are not responsible and you have every right to take that money. And then the next pasuk says something which is mad. Ve'haya im bin hakot harasha, vipilo hashofet, so then if it turns out that the one who was the Rasha is supposed to be beaten, so then this sure enough the Shofet actually does that. Kimispar. Then we have the whole Parsha of giving Malchus at that point. Now, that is an extremely strange kind of pasuk because it says, now, what does that have to do with Vayayin bin Hakot HaRasha? I mean, this is an argument between people. They come to court, and now we're talking about beating people up? What in the world is going on? Just because of Yitzdiku at Tzadik and Yirshiyot, we're going to therefore make certain that we're going to give him Malkut because the judges paskind a halacha, we're going to go ahead and we're going to give him malkut. I mean, this makes absolutely no sense at all to me. So how do you explain that? Ah, therefore say I, Ula, this is actually an incredible halacha, which is coming to teach us that there was clearly a false witnesses that had started off, which had the court giving the wrong psak originally. And that's the language of tzaddik and rasha. The whole idea of tzaddik and rasha is very strange. So, mishum vitzdiku et tzaddik, virshiu et rasha, vayayim bin hakot rasha. I mean, this is a regular case in court. What are we making such a big deal about beating people? Ella, what happened over here was, initially, the ideas of the Tzaddik and the Rasha is a reference to, not that between the two people, it's not talking about, it's talking about not what the judges had said, it's what the witnesses had said. And that's the reference. Adin had come in, and they had seen to it that there was a conviction of an innocent individual. Here's Shila Tzaddik. Obviously, it was originally a person who was a tzaddik, had done nothing wrong, and they had the court convict him of having done something wrong. Now, other witnesses come along. They say, you were with us. You couldn't possibly have seen that. And they bring the court to be Hitzdiku et Tzaddik. They put things straight. No, that guy that those witnesses said was a Rasha, he was actually the tzaddik in the first place. And now who is the real Rasha? These rotten witnesses. So they were Hitzdiku et Tzaddik and Shavinu Lahane Rishaim. Yeshua Tarasha is a reference to the witnesses. They make the original witnesses Rishaim because they had originally been Marshiat HaTzadik and now were able to be Matzdik the Tzadik and show who really was the Rasha. And the real Rasha was the witness, the two witnesses. So then, the Haya Imbina Kot HaRasha, it may be that you're left with no other Onesh. But Malkus, where would that be? Well, you can't do Kasha Zama, V'Hipilu HaShofet, and there is where we learn out the din of Malkus. So it's coming to tell me that there is a very strange parsha in the Torah that relates Malkus directly to take the place of Kasha Zama. Wow. Now things start getting interesting. So we've got a Masechet over here that is built around a mystery. Now, the question is, isn't there a simple solution to this? Instead of getting all mysterious and creating a whole new fundamental underpinning to a Masechet and change its name and everything, why can't we simply say that the reason that we give these Edim Malkus is because there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Lo ta'aneh b're'acha et shaker. Sounds very familiar. It's up there on the top of most of the Aron Kodeshes even, and everybody knows that one, even if they don't know anything else. They know the Aseres Hadibros, and it says over there, do not bear false witness against your whatever, how they translate, I don't know, they re'acha, they translate neighbor, I don't know what they do there. But anyway, we know re'acha, of course, is a complex idea. So anyway, why isn't that the obvious answer? Well, you can't use that love to give malchus, because it doesn't involve any action. It's rishum davi lav she'ein bo ma'aseh, and another gavi rule, we can ask Kori about this one, kol lav she'ein bo ma'aseh in lokina lav. The din is that if you don't do anything, then, we're going to see later on what the basis of this is, but it's actually a diak in the Torah, you cannot give malchus, and that actually has to do with the next pasuk that we're going to be talking about in this strange parsha, because believe it or not, after Vitzdik with Atzadik Rashiya Sarosha, guess what the Torah talks about in the same parsha Setuma? Lo taksom shor bedishov. What in the world? What does that have to do with anything? And it turns out that we use Lo Taksom Shor B'Dishov as the model for all Malkus. Can you imagine? So forget about just the mystery of the Eden Zomimim's relationship to Malkus. The whole Parsha is a very strange and mysterious foundational approach to Malkus that relates it to two what appear to be completely unrelated issues about Lo Taksom Shor B'Dishov and the idea of Edim Zomimim. But in any event, from there we will derive that kol lav she'ein bo maaseh, because it's not similar to lo tachsom, because that you do by actually moving your arms and putting a muzzle over it. And since this is not similar, that can't be the source. So the source has got to be the vitzdiko tatzadik itself and not the lo tane b'reacha et shaker, which means that the lo tachsom shor b'disho, which closes the parsha, is the reason that vitzdiko tatzadik has to be understood as the mocker of Malkus, for the very Malkus that the Mishnah is talking about. You see, that doesn't come out clearly here because you don't know what's going to be coming up later in the Masechet. But when you take a look at the whole thing with the perspective, it's absolutely crazy, mind-boggling. So we've set up this whole thing to force this idea of a relationship to the dinim of Edim, Zomimim, and Malkus. Now, actually, these are not the only cases that we cannot carry out the concept of Hazama. So far, we've only spoken about Me'idim on Rabish Plonish, Ben Grush, Ben Chalutza, and we spoke about the din of Me'idim on Rabish Plonish, Shu Chayev Liglot. But there are other cases, and let me tell you some of them. There is a braita that goes like this. Tana Rabbana. There's actually four cases. Arba'a devarim ne'emru be'edim zomimim. Again, we introduce it as if it's a general din in edim zomimim. Well, what we're actually going to be talking about are four cases where we cannot use the din of hazama in edim zomimim. What a strange way to say. There's four things said about edim zomimim, huh? So what are these four cases? Okay, two we know. Einasim ben grusha ben chalutza. A. B. Ein golin lare miklat. Okay, those two we know. Now here's a new one. Ein mishalmim et hakofer. So suppose they say that someone's shor, which was a muad, killed a human, and the din is over there that the owner of the shor is going to have to pay kofer. Okay, so he has to pay the value either, it's machlokas, as we'll see, if it's his own value or if it's the value of the person who was murdered by the shor. But if they can end up being Edim Zomimim and they weren't even there, we don't make them pay the kofer. Let's see why. The next thing that was C, D, is Enim Karm Be'Avad Ivri. Suppose they say, this guy stole $1 million, and he doesn't have $1 million to pay back what he stole. What would be the halakha of such a person? He is sold as an Eved Ivri to recover the money that he stole. Now, if these witnesses say that that's what was supposed to happen to him, they are not sold as Eved Ivri. Again, we'll have to see why not. And Rabbi Akiva says, there's another very special halacha of Edim Zomimim where there's no din of Kasher Zamam, and that is if they confess to the Hazama, they're not Mishalmim Al Pi Atzmam. We do not carry out the Kasher Zamam. We'll have to see what that case is in the Mishnah. Let's go through it one by one. Ein Nasim Ben Grush Ben Chalutza, fine. We explained that. Ingolin Lore Mikla, yes, fine. We explained that. That's the who and not the Zomim. Ein Mishalmim et hakofer. Now, why not? Well, that's because the Tana of this Braita hold that Kufra is a Kapora. V'hai lav b'nei Kapora ninu. Basically, the purpose of Kofer is not to pay a value of something. It is to get a Kapora for yourself for having not watched your shor and being negligent in causing a person's death. Now, it makes no sense to apply the kapora that was going to be applied to this individual who needed to pay maybe his own value to the Lord. So we're going to have them pay his value to the Lord for what purpose? For no purpose. I mean, that's not the tashlum mekefer. So therefore, if it's a kapora, these guys do not have any shaykhus to that kapora, because paying it as kasher zamam is not paying that kapora. And therefore, you can't be mekayim kasher zamam. But wait a minute. Before I go on, Who is the Tana that says that kofar is a kapora and not an actual payment for the value of the person who was killed? I mean, if it's a payment for the value of the person who was killed, then why wouldn't we make them pay? That's a straight out payment, isn't it? So you're saying, well, if it's a kapora, it's not paying for the value. Who holds that? Om Rav Chista, I'll tell you. That is Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Barokas, Shita. Because look at this braita, famous machlokas, the Tanya. It says in the Torah that the owner of the shor, Natan Pidyon Nafsho, he has to pay a ransom for his soul. What does he pay for the ransom of his soul? And according to the Tanna Kamma, the value of the person who was killed by his shor. And that gives him basically the way out. Otherwise, we'd have to kill him, because that's what it says. It says that the gamba love yumat, and the im kofar yushata love v'natan pidyon nafsho, and then we don't kill him. So he is just paying what? The value of the victim. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Barokas says, no, what do you mean? How could be the value of the victim? It's his value. So, I mean, isn't that the machlokas? Very clear machlokas. If you hold that you're paying for the victim, so then that means you get a kapora by a monetary payment. Like as if you stole something, you pay the money back. That's part of your kapora. You want to do teshuva, what do? You pay back the money. So the same thing is true over here. You're paying back the money, so to speak. You can't give back the life, but you can pay the value of that life. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel, he holds that clearly it is considered to be a kapora on your life, and you're the one whose life is being bought out, so to speak. So therefore, you have to pay the value that you would fetch on the market. Okay, so that is apparently the machlokas. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, he is saying kufr is a kapora. So what sense would it make to say Adim Zomim should be paying the value of his life? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Om Rav Papa, not necessarily. I mean, there may be a different argument over here. Everybody may agree that essentially kufr is a kapora. The only question is, what is the kapora? The Tanna Kamma holds the kapora is defined as doing a kapora on your soul by paying the value of the nizik, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka holds that the kapora is paying for your soul. But basically, they might be arguing it's something else. What would that be? That's a question of the use of the word in the pasuk. I mean, why would, look, Rabbi Shmuel makes sense, right? If you're giving kofar nafsho, so obviously you're paying your value. It's very strange to say that you will be paying a kofar for your soul by paying someone else's value. So where would they get that from? We're not going to ask here. We don't. Why does Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka say what he says? It's obvious. That's what you would say. That's what I would say. But why did the Chachomim say otherwise? You see, because it uses the same word in two parshios. Kofar is defined as im kofar yushat alav. Interesting word, yushat alav. What's imposed? What's this yushat? Well, there's one other place. And that was the famous case that we had about the two people who were fighting, and they bashed into this woman. And it says over there that in the event that the fetus is lost, then it's kasher yushat alav ba'al ha'isha. Same word, only other place. Now over there, it's talking about what? Dmei v'ladot. So that is a straight-out payment for the fetus that was damaged. And over here, the same thing is true. Kasher yushatalav, im kofar yushatalav, how do we be yushatalav? By paying for what he caused in the death through not watching his shor properly. That's what we learn it from. So nema ashata lamata, when nema ashata lamala, talking about the kasher yushat ba'ala yisha, ma'ala halam ben nizek, so to kan here ben nizek. And why doesn't Rabbi Shmuel say that the use of the word seems to be indicative? He says it says beferish over here, v'natan pidyon nafsho. He has to give a ransom for his own nefesh. So what do you tell me? He pays somebody else's value if it's his own nefesh? Say the Rabbanim, why not? It's Fidyon Nafsho. What is the ransom that he pays for his life? The value of what was caused by his shor. Mil, kishaymian. When we're going to assess it, we assess it according to the value of the nizik. That is, doesn't seem to be a contradiction to us. That's being an afsho. Anyway, getting back to the four cases. So the fourth case, case D, was ein nimkarim be'eved ivri. Sover Rav Nuna lemeimar. So Rav Nuna thought that what the Braita is saying is that in a case, and only in the case, where the person that they were falsely claiming had stolen this money had enough money to pay for the robbery. And the witnesses, they don't. So now we'd say, you would think that we do to them what we would have done to him. And we would have said they should be sold as an Eved Ivri, just as he would have been sold. But what about if he had the money? He wouldn't have been sold. So that's what the case is over here. Since, in effect, they were saying he has to pay money, and they never said he has to be sold, therefore we don't sell them. So because Migu de Iulon is Davin, since he's not going to be sold, they also never testified to sell. But how about if the falsely accused did not have money to pay back that $1 million, and he would have been sold, then the Wadir is Hecha, the Letle Lididei, if he would have been sold, even if these witnesses who are Zoymimim do have $1 million, they can't pay $1 million. They have to be sold. Afagav the Itlu Lididu, they would be sold because they were testifying that he would be sold. That's what Rav Nuna thought. Says the Gemara, how could Rav Nuna have thought that? That doesn't make sense. I mean, why can't they say, look, if you would have had the money like us, you wouldn't have been sold, so do to us what we would have done to you. That's a condition. I mean, that has nothing to do. We said you were either going to be sold or paid, depending on whether you had money or didn't have money. Fine. Apply the same thing to us. You guys are either going to be sold or you're going to pay. Well, we have money, so we're going to pay. So I don't understand. Why are you saying that we can't pay? You wouldn't have been sold. We can't be sold. You're right. Okay. What Rav Nuna actually meant to say was something different. We misrepresented it. What he was saying was like this. Sava Rav Nuna lemeimar, hani mili hecha deitle olididei oliditu. Where do we say that we're not going to sell the Edom Zomimim? That's where either they have money, so they could say, well, I mean, we do have the money, we're going to be b'chai of you to pay, so we pay. Or the victim of the false testimony had money. Because then they could say, look, it's true, we don't have money, but we weren't going to make you be sold, so we shouldn't be sold. But if we're talking about in a case where nobody has money, neither the victim has $1 million, nor the testimony, the testifiers, the witnesses don't have $1 million. So since essentially in that case, they were testifying that he should be sold, and they don't have the money to take the place of the sale, then in that case, they should be sold. Therefore, they are, according to Rav Nuna, this is not quite the same as the other cases, because here it depends on the circumstances. Says Rav, no. The reason that we don't sell Edom Zomimim is because of Gzerat HaKatuv. It says in the Torah, V'nimkar b'gneva tov. He can be sold only for having stolen. Only b'gneva tov, v'lo b'zomimo. So it has nothing to do with the circumstances of the case. It has nothing to do with the financials. It simply is Gzerat HaKatuv. And then Rabbi Akiva says, there's another very important issue. That issue is whether they are going to be Mishalim Alpi Atzman. And I would suggest that since it's so late, we make this part of tomorrow's Daf Bezrat Hashem. And tomorrow, also, please allow a little bit of additional time so that we can actually do our Siyum.